I've noticed that in novels, when the hero has to move any distance at all, he leaps onto a mettlesome steed which carries him at breakneck speed over incredible distances, without ever casting a shoe or going lame or simply running out of wind and strength. On my flight from Strachan's, admittedly, my beast bore up remarkably well, despite the fact that I rode him hard until we were over the border and into Prussia. After that I went easier, for I'd no wish to have him founder under me before I'd put some distance between myself and possible pursuit. But 30 miles, with my weight to carry, is asking a lot of any animal, and by afternoon I was looking for a place to lie up until he was fit for the road again. We found one, in an old barn miles from anywhere, and I rubbed him down and got him some fodder, before using up some of my store of cold food for myself. I took a tack to the south next day, for it seemed to me on reflection that the wider I could pass from Berlin, the better. I knew my luck. I was going to have to go closer to Schönhausen than was comfortable, and it would have been just like it if I'd run into dear Otto on the way. As it happened, I needn't have worried. There was plenty to occupy him in Berlin just then. But I'd planned out my line of march, acting on the assumption that the safest route was through the heart of Germany to Munich, where I could choose whether to go on to Switzerland, Italy, or even France. I decided to make first of all for Magdeburg, where I could take to the railway. After that it should be plain sailing to Munich. But in the meantime I'd ride by easy stages, keeping to the country and out of sight so far as possible. My baggage wouldn't stand examination if I ran across any of the great tribe of officials who are always swarming in Germany, looking for other folks' business to meddle in. In fact, I was being more cautious than was necessary. There was no telegraph in those days to overtake the fugitive, and even if there had been, and the Strachensians had been silly enough to use it, no one in Germany would have had much time for me, while I was sneaking from one Prussian hedge to another with my bag of loot. Europe was beginning to erupt in the greatest convulsion she'd known since Napoleon died. The great revolts, of which I'd heard a murmur from Rudy, were about to burst on an astonished world. They'd begun in Italy, where the excitable spaghettis were in a ferment. Soon Metternich would be scuttling from Vienna. The French had proclaimed yet another republic. Berlin would see the barricades up within a month, and Lola's old leaping partner, Ludwig, would shortly be bound for the knacker's yard. I knew nothing of all these things, of course, and I take some pride in the fact that while thrones were toppling and governments melting away overnight, I was heading for home with a set of crown jewels. There's a moral there, I think, if I could only work out what it was. Possibly it doesn't apply only to me, either. You will recall that while the continent was falling apart, old England went her way without revolutions or disturbances, beyond a few workers' agitations. We like to think we're above that sort of thing. Of course, the Englishman, however miserably off he is, supposes that he's a free man, poor fool, and pities the unhappy foreigners raging against their rulers. And his rulers, of course, trade on that feeling and keep him underfoot while assuring him that Britons never shall be slaves. Mark you, our populace may be wiser than it knows. For so far as I can see, revolutions never benefited the ordinary folk one bit. They have to work just as hard and starve just as thin as ever. All the good they may get from rebellion is perhaps a bit of loot and rape at the time, and our English peasantry doesn't seem to go in for that sort of thing at home, possibly because they're mostly married men with responsibility. Anyway, the point I'm making is that I've no doubt the revolt of 48 did England a bit of good by keeping out of them and making money. And that, as you've gathered, was the intention of H. Flashman, Esquire, also. However, things never go as you intend, even in European revolutions. My third night on the road, I came down with a raging fever, fiery throat, belly pumping, and my head throbbing like a steam engine. I suppose it was sure to happen after being immersed in icy water twice in one night, taking a wound and being three parts drowned, to say nothing of the nervous damage I'd suffered into the bargain.